Welcome to We Like Dota, brought to you by our patrons, TL Cone, Nine Eggs, Justin, Lonnie, Rusty, Dr. Carmack, Mitchell Metzler, Clint Block, Demento, Elihu, Dandy Russ, Carl Underwood, Can Dashel, Flossen, and Titus Andromedon. Episode 187 starts now. Hello, everyone. It's me, Sam, the Plaid Pirate, and I have with me Arian Retro Ent. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good.
Excellent. I am also doing well. Very excited to talk to everybody about Dota this week. So why don't we get right into it? Arian, how was your week in Dota, and how did it make you feel?
My week in Dota, it was kind of a lot of ups and downs. So I'm going to pick some games which were kind of the high and low points of my week. So
perfect.
I started off on a high note. I played Slark with some friends of mine. And safe lane, just the standard stuff. And we managed to kill Bristleback when he was level 1. And as you guys probably all know, on level 1, Bristleback is insanely weak. Because he can't have his damage reduction and W.
Right,
and he actually skilled his damage reduction,
so he had bristle back and yes. No quill spray.
So he couldn't damage us, but because his level 1 damage reduction is so bad, I think it's like 16% or something, we could kill him anyway. So we killed him once. He came back to lane. We killed him twice because his team sadly wasn't really supporting him. So we killed him 3 times, and then my 2 supports left the tri lane, and every time he came up, I could just kill him again. At the end,
who were you playing? You were Slark.
Slark. Yeah, okay. So if you get a good Slark on... you can just solo kill on lane because of your combo with the ledge and the Q.
So you pounce and you Q.
Yeah, I pounce, Q, hit him a couple of times, and he's dead.
I have a question for you. With Slark's Q, does that dispel the quill spray stacks?
It actually does, and it's super good against Bristleback.
Oh,
that's why
super good.
I think that's we're gonna. I feel like in general Bristleback isn't very good right now. He was amazing before Guardian Greaves were introduced, but with Guardian Greaves, you can just dispel the quills on your whole team, and then they also implemented Silver Edge. So now he can't really get, like, can't really depend on this damage reduction late game, and they didn't really give him anything in return. So I think Bristleback is pretty weak now in general. And
that's probably true.
Yeah. That game is evident. He had 23 deaths at the end.
Oof.
And in lane, I killed him 11 times.
Oh.
And against the Slark, feeding him 11 kills early, that's just game losing. Because Slark relies on the snowball so hard, and if you give him 11 kills in the first like 10 minutes, there's no way you don't lose that game. So I had 29 kills, 15 assists, and that Bristleback ended up with one kill and 23 deaths.
Feels bad, man.
Feels pretty bad.
Feels bad. I just looked up Slark. His dark pack is a strong dispel.
Yeah, that means it also dispels most stuns.
Correct.
That's why he's
that's what makes Slark such a slippery fish, because he's got the dark pack and he's got the pounce, so he's got a lot of mobility.
Yeah.
That sounds like an excellent game.
Yeah, it was a fun game, but it was followed up by a very unfun game because...
Oh no.
I usually don't like to play support in pubs when I'm not playing with a carry I can depend on. And that game, I played Lich. It was kind of the perfect example for that. So I tried really hard. I was playing against a Klings and a Husker who were both offlane against me. We killed him 5 times, a Husker, on a dual lane. because I felt like I was doing a pretty good job at just harassing the Husker and abusing that he has a shorter attack range than me.
Mm.
And we also had a drow, so he couldn't really run. And I just bought so many sentries. At the end of that match, let me look it up, I spent 6,550 gold on wards alone. And we still lost that match. I gave my team a huge early advantage by just placing sentry wards everywhere, and that Klings had a horrible start because of that, because everywhere he would run, we just would just kill him because we had sentries everywhere. And I kept it up, but my carries just didn't really deliver, because I don't know them. I, of course, can't count on them on being good, so we still lost in the end, which feels pretty bad, because I put a lot of effort in that game.
I'm sorry. Dota is a cruel mistress.
But then...
Yeah, it's definitely frustrating when you feel like you kind of played your part, but in the end, you still didn't get the outcome that you want.
That's true. And
do you have like any like maybe lessons that you learned from that game? Like any idea like what went wrong in the late game or anything like that?
I don't think I can like. I was at the end of that game. I would say that I rarely tilt in games, but at the end of that game, I was just so tilted. I was looking at what my teammates did wrong. I wasn't really being self-crit, I didn't really use self-centered criticism anymore, because I was just so tilted. So
yeah.
I wouldn't say I learned anything from that game, just to not play support on pubs.
Oh my god, this is the worst lesson to
I'm
give
sorry,
our
guys.
Listeners. Maybe that is the lesson. Don't get tilted, friends.
Yeah, don't get tilted.
try not to get tilted. And maybe just play support with your friends. Because
then you'll win.
You know what you're getting. Then you'll maybe win. Yeah, seems good. Yeah. What other games did you play this week?
So I played a Storm Spirit game with my boy, maybe you know him, he's called Sam the Plaid Pirate on Steam. And
oh!
Yeah, I don't know if you know him actually. So
wow.
I played Storm Spirit, and they kind of had a wacky lineup against Storm Spirit, in my opinion. They had the only reason they had was Windranger, Rubik, and Alchemist, which are not really the things you want to have against Storm Spirit, because against Storm Spirit you ideally want to have the two things you want to do in Storm Spirit. We're gonna go into that in Hero of the Week 2. You want silences, and you don't want to give him a good lane. And they gave me both, so they didn't pick any silences, and they let me mid lane against an Alchemist, who ended up with 15k net worth, which is horrible for net worth, and 0 killed, 6 deaths. And we both just took control of the game super early. And when you take control of a game so early as Storm Spirit, you just feel unstoppable. Because I got an early Bloodstone, got like 30 charges in that, and then just ended the game with 16 kills and 1 death.
So tell us why Storm Spirit versus Alchemist is such a good lane for Storm Spirit.
Storm Spirit, he's not... I'd say he's an okay laner if you play him well, but he's not that good against ranged heroes. But against melee heroes, he's insanely good. Because if you look up his abilities, which I'm going to do really quick because I want to get the mana cost, his Q only costs 100 mana, which isn't really that high. So if a melee hero wants to harass you, he has of course to come close to you and hit you, which means you can get your Q on, let's say it's level 2, that's 180 damage with the overload charge from your E that of course procs when you press Q, you get another 60 damage. So you just did 240 damage to a hero for the mana cost of 100, which is incredibly efficient in lane. You can do that so many times. And also the Q has only a 3.5 second cooldown. So it's basically 240 magic damage on a 3.5 second cooldown against melee heroes. So that basically means that Alchemist couldn't lane against me.
So folks, this will make more sense if you're not familiar with Storm Spirit. We'll go over this later, but Q is a static remnant, which... it's kind of like how Earth Spirit has a stone. Mm-hmm. Like you hit Q and a little remnant comes out of you, and if somebody walks near it, it gets triggered and it explodes and it does damage. And then the E, the passive that Aaron's talking about, is Overload. And basically what happens is every time Storm Spirit casts a spell, his next attack gets buffed. So we'll, again, talk about this more later, but I just wanted to explain that a little bit in case people didn't know what the Q for Storm was.
It's just amazing against melee heroes in lane. So yeah, let's
kind of... Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So you outlaned the heck out of that guy. Trying to put myself in his shoes, did anybody, like, try to help him? Like, did you get ganked at all?
Yeah, I got ganked, but at that point when I ganked him, like, they... Against Alchemist, you want to snowball. And I already killed him twice before his supports came in. And then he was like level 6 or something. I was level 8 because he spent a lot of time off lane because I harassed him so much. And then Ruby came to gank him. Oh no, wait, I think it was Venomancer actually. Yeah, it was Venomancer. And I just killed them both because I already had my Bloodstone. And I didn't have my Bloodstone, sorry. I had my Mana Boots, I had my Bottle, and I had two Mangos because he was a bonus hero in the week where we played him. So I just had a lot of mana to work with, and Storm Spirit with a lot of mana just translates that into kills. And I just killed both.
Especially, sorry, when you... Because by that time you said you were level 8, and so by that time you have, you know, you have your ultimate. And so once you're zipping and you have enough mana to sustain that zip, it's nearly impossible to gank you without a silence or... really coordinated chain stun. So
like in a normal lane scenario I would just wouldn't have died from the gank, but in that scenario, because I was so far ahead already, I could just kill them both, which pulled me ahead even more, and that's really when the game got out of control for the enemy team.
So the rest of that game, tell us more about the rest of that game, because your lane went great, and then like you said, you snowballed
and I was starting to rotate against the enemy team, and I rotated to your lane. I think you were laning against the Monkey King. You were playing Silencer, and Monkey King can't really deal with Storm, and also Venomancer can't really deal with Storm, and those were the two guys on the other lanes, and I could just rotate, run around lanes and kill everybody, which is ideally what you want to do with Storm. But if you're so far ahead, you don't even have to farm, you just farm off heroes, which is what I did.
That game was that was a fun game. I liked the... So we were obviously a party, and then we got matched with a three stack, and I liked them a lot. They were actually pretty nice and fun to play with. So that was cool. That makes a big difference. any other games you want to talk about?
I don't think so. I think we can go ahead and talk about you week and Dota.
Okay, I just have one game that I want to talk about, even though I've played a fair amount of Dota this past week, but I just want to talk about the game that I played this morning. So I played a Lion. He's the bonus hero today. Yes. So I was like, oh, I want to play Lion. Two extra mangoes in the beginning feels great. Because Lion is a super... What makes him balanced is that his spells are very high mana cost. So if you give me two mangoes to start the game, that just sounds amazing. But I would say the game overall, as Dota often is, was pretty frustrating. I was with a Klinks in the safe lane, and we were up against a Juggernaut and an Earthshaker. And so, I don't know. I feel like it should have went better.
Yeah, did you lose the lane?
I would say, I think we about tied it.
Okay.
It was just sloppy.
Because...
Actually, no, that's not true. I think we won the lane.
That's what I would expect.
I think we did okay.
Klinks and Lion against Earthshaker and Juggernaut? It sounds insane, because Juggernaut can't even spin because the Klinks arrows deal physical damage.
Right. And so it was the type of game where, like, if I had been playing with a party, like if it was you and I or something, it would have been much easier because I could have just said to the clanks, like, hey man, let's kill this juggernaut. And then we would have, and then I would have queued, and then I would have permastunned him after level two because I have hex plus his whatever earth spike is a really long disable, and we would have been great.
So did you try to communicate with him at all, or did he just didn't respond to your communication?
Both, yeah. So I think he was a little bit newer to the game, because he kept auto attacking the wave and stuff, and I was like, and so I got on the mic and I was just like, hey man, maybe don't auto attack the wave, it's pushing pretty hard, like maybe just go for the last hits. And I think he tried to listen. I just think he's a little bit newer at the game, so it was kind of hard for him to, you know, okay. I mean, last hitting's hard, so that's fine. And then, like, you know, a simple mistake was, like, I pulled the lane. I had, like, you know, it was attacking the small camp, and I go to make my connecting pull. I look up, and Klinx is there right-clicking the creeps that I have. And so, yeah, so the creeps ended up finishing too early, and I couldn't get my connecting pull, and then, of course, the wave pushed more, and I was just like, hey, man, I know you want last hits, but, like, can you maybe pay attention to the, like, connecting pull? Because, you know, tough, it was tough. So, what did I learn from that game? I think I learned that I really like Lion. I think he's really fun. You do, like, you just have so much disable, which is just really, it's just fun. It's a fun support because, you know, as long as you don't have, as long as you're not, like, going up against BKBs, you feel pretty relevant, which is nice.
Especially because their team lineup, I feel like Lion was actually an amazing pick because you were up against Slark, Lich, Earthshaker, Zeus, and Juggernaut. None of these heroes really want to pick up BKB. And if they do, it's just, it's not ideal for them. So it'll end up weakening them overall if they pick up BKB.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, like, the lane was a bit frustrating, but, like, I'm not going to get mad about, like, my teammates being maybe a little bit newer to the game. Like, that's fine, you know, like, that's Dota, like, that's how you learn, it's unranked, like, no problem. Something that I found a little bit hard to stomach was, for some reason, somebody picked Tinker, and somebody picked Invoker, and so they put their icons on the minimap, and Tinker put his in offlane. And Invoker put his on middle lane. And I was like, hey guys, do you guys want to maybe switch? Like, maybe Tinker can go mid and Invoker can go off lane. You know, Invoker is a little bit of a better off lane hero. I know it's not ideal, but, like, you know, Tinker's going to probably have a hard time in the off lane. And Tinker says, I'd rather not go mid. I'm not a good mid.
That's honest.
Which is honest, which I commend, but also confusing, because why, that's what I'm saying, why did he pick Tinker? Because, like, is offlane Tinker a thing?
I think it was at some point, but it isn't anymore, because especially now, offlane just sucks to play in general, and you don't get gold, and you barely get levels, and Tinker without gold and levels is basically a creep.
Right, and he was going against a Lich Slark combo, which is a really hard lane, like, for to anyone. Play against,
yes.
So, I guess I didn't get, like, why? Like, because that lane's really hard, and he fed, which, like, I don't blame him for, but also, because his hero is just not suited to, you know, be in that situation, but at the same time, like, why not just have Invoker go there, and at least then he has, like, a little bit of a better chance.
I'm looking at the game right now. Tinker got his Boots of Travel at minute 27.
Yes, the game was over. Yeah, we lost 4 minutes later. So, I did my best not to like be tilted and just like get. That's the hard part about Dota, right? Is that, you know, I'm in the game. I'm like, okay, Tinker has fed. He's, you know, at some point he was like level. Well, he finished the game as level 12. Mm-hmm. So. He was by far the lowest level on the team, and I was like, okay, like, I have to sit here at my computer while we lose this Dota game, because there's, like, at a certain point, there's just no coming back. And it's very difficult to just, like, wrap your head around that and be like, okay, like, how do I make the best use of this time?
Do you know what I mean? It's like you wasted the 33 minutes of your time because of one guy making a stupid decision, basically.
So it's like easy to feel that way, and I'm trying to find ways to not feel that way, right? So like trying to feel like, okay, like, yes, I played 34 minutes of Dota. It was not like the most enjoyable 34 minutes of Dota, but like, what can I learn from that experience? And like, how can I prevent myself from tilting in the future and even in the moment? You know what I mean?
The thing that works for me is it's not in game, because in game, I feel like if I'm in the right mood, I think I rarely tilt. And the thing I like to do before I solo queue, but I actually barely ever solo queue anymore, is if before I start the game, before I start queuing, I ask myself if I'm like ready to lose a game of Dota 2. Because when you're party queuing, you kind of have someone to bounce back on. But when you're solo queuing, you don't. So you have to be ready for losing. And if you think losing wouldn't be fun for you right now, then you shouldn't queue. So just ask yourself, maybe it works for me. Maybe it doesn't work for you. Who knows? But just ask yourself if you think you're ready for losing right now. And if you think, yeah, I could go for losing a game right now, I think it would still be fun, then you can queue.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Because, you know, like, I think we were talking about this the other day. Like, my win rate is, like, barely above 50%. Like, maybe 54, 56 or something like that. So, you know, half the time you're playing Dota, you lose.
Yes.
And, I think that's a really good idea. Like, if you're not in the mood to lose a game of Dota, then don't play at all. go do something else.
And also, when you're grinding solo MMR, which I think none of us does actively, but if someone out there grinds solo MMR,
yeah,
try to not get tilted around single games. Don't put as much worth in a single game, because the way you rank up in Dota, the way you like substantially raise an MMR, unless you're smurfing, of course, is you play 100 games and you maybe win, like, if you're way, like, if you're very good, because there go so many things go into winning a game of Dota 2 that you make such a small contribution that you having a 60% win rate already means you're extremely above your current MMR. So the point I'm trying to make is, you're going to play 100 games, you're going to win maybe like 58. And assuming you get 25 per game, that's like 200 MMR. So you only get 200 MMR for 100 games, which means you just have to grind. And you can't get tilted around a single game, because even if you're extremely good, you're still going to lose about half the time.
There you have it, folks. Don't get tilted.
Don't get tilted.
How about we talk about some people who have very high MMR, very yes. good at Dota. Let's talk about Epicenter. So this weekend, well, depends when people are listening to this, but recently Epicenter finished. I don't think anybody will be spoiled to know the victors. PSG LGD won.
Surprisingly, actually. I thought that Liquid was going to beat them in the final, but sadly it didn't happen.
Yes,
Arian, I'm totally not crying right now.
Oh, Arian is a Liquid fanboy, so
not only Liquid fanboy, I was an original Liquid fanboy back before TI7, when they formed, and everybody was calling them trash, and that was the point where I decided I'm going to be a Liquid fan, because I liked the logo, and I was a huge Kuroki fan. And I'm a Liquid fan from the beginning, so seeing them win TI was amazing. And so they haven't won a major yet, which really made me sad. But I think it's a strat, actually. But I think we're going to get into that later.
Fantastic. They do have a great logo.
Yes, it's amazing.
So what did you think about the tournament in general? Like, the panel quality, production quality, that type of stuff.
So I like the panel quality. They had Kyle on there, which is the guy who left Complexity, if you guys don't know that. He brought some really nice insight into the panel, because he basically came fresh off being a actual pro player onto the panel, so he could just bring a lot of insight. But Kyle was kind of, for me personally, getting annoying sometimes, because he kind of overstated his points in some situations. But generally, I still liked him, and I'd actually love to have him on the TI panels too.
I think that he'll only improve as a caster, because, like you're saying, he came fresh off of, you know, this is like his first thing, right? So
he just started.
Yeah.
And yeah, they also brought Admiral Bulldog, which I really liked, actually. I think he's kind of undervalued in terms of what insight he can bring to a game.
What do you like about him?
I sometimes watch his stream. I can't do it for long, because I can't expose myself to that many Twitch streams at one point. But I like his personality. I loved him when he was still in Alliance. He was one of my favorite players back then, so I think it's just cool to see a retired player kind of get back into the scene again, because for the past years he was basically just a streamer.
Yeah, I enjoy his stream, and I think you're right. I think it's nice to see somebody like Admiral Bulldog on the panel. It's always nice to have that perspective of a former player, that he definitely sees the game in a really unique way, and I think he's pretty good at articulating, at like dumbing that down to the like something that I can understand, which I appreciate.
That's true. He used, especially during the chat, the Twitch chat was flaming him during the finals cast. But he used very simple wins to describe stuff, which I really like. Maybe they're going to bring back the newbies theorem on TI, and he's going to be on there. Maybe.
Oh, all right. Well, we'll see. How about the format? How did you, can you describe the format a little bit?
Yeah, so the format was two groups. So there were 12 teams attending. They had 5 direct invites and 7 qualifier spots. And they were split into two groups. They played in a round robin format, that which meant everybody played everybody. And those round robin matches were best of threes,
which just
a huge number of games.
Yes.
So they played a ton of games, and it showed, because it was a very long tournament. It went on for a week, I think. Yeah, pretty much a week. And yeah, after that, after the group seedings were done, the top two teams from each group came into the upper bracket. The middle teams came into the lower bracket. And the bottom two teams of each group were eliminated, which was sad, because it was Na'Vi.
Oh,
they're not back. They beat, I think they had a good series against VP. And like, they had one good match against VP, and everybody was so hyped. But in the end, they sadly didn't win. But yeah, we'll have to deal with that. So they were seeded into the upper and lower bracket, as it always goes. The lower bracket from round 1 and round 2 was actually best of ones. That means, that just means you lose one game, you get eliminated from the tournament. And the upper bracket was best of threes overall, and the lower bracket became a best of three bracket, starting at and from round 3. And I think from what I picked up, the pros really liked the tournament format, because pros hate single elimination, and correct, as long as it's double elim, And as long as it's best of three double elim for a good chunk of the lower bracket, I think they really liked it.
Cool. I mean, I know how I feel about long events. I enjoy that because, like, if a tournament is going for a week, it's great for me. Because it's just, like, I know I can turn on Twitch whenever I have some free time and just kind of casually watch.
Yeah.
But I also understand that there are obviously downsides to having a very long
exhausting
tournament.
For the pros.
Yes.
It doesn't really pay off from a financial standpoint for the tournament organizers to do a long tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Because group stages, generally, that's going to be the longest part, and that they generally don't get a lot of views. But
right.
I, as a viewer, especially because I was having a lot of exams in the week where the tournament was taking place, and it was just great to miss one day and then still have a lot of tournaments left to watch.
Right. Absolutely. Okay, so that sounds good. So the big story coming out of this tournament was Fly to Moon. do you want to talk about them a little bit?
Yes, Fly to Moon was I think they're a Russian team, if I'm...
Yes.
Yeah, they're a Russian team. So them and VP were the only actually Russian teams. I won't count Navi as Russian. They were the only Russian teams in the tournament. And they kind of came... I think I compare them to DC. Because... what was that Boston Major squad, the Greek squad, who got really far?
Oh, of course. Oh no, totally blanking on it now.
That Greek squad, give me a second. Might as well. That Greek squad, basically. They came out of nowhere and they had really, like, the players weren't really known. But DC had...
Ed Finnem,
that was it. So Ed Finnem came out of nowhere and nobody knew the players and they still wrecked. Fly to Moon, nobody really knew them, I felt like. The tournament was the first time I heard of them. Mm-hmm. But when you look at the players, you actually recognize a lot of them. I know Always on the Fly, No Fear and Iceberg. I think I heard of them a decent amount of times.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think they came out of nowhere and they just rolled up the tournament. They got seeded in the lower bracket. They beat OG in a best of one. And I mean, they beat Pain Gaming as well, but... They were expected to be Pain Gaming. OG was not as expected, and Fly to Moon against VP was a best of three. The other ones were best of one, but in a best of three, beating a team like VP, that's a huge achievement. And they 2-0'd VP.
Wow.
It was pretty sad for the crowd because they both were Russian, but because people were expecting VP to go farther, and VP has a huge fan base in Russia.
Sure.
Everybody was cheering for VP and they just got 2-0'd and eliminated from the tournament.
Was there a certain type of playstyle that they were using? Or
I think they were just amazing at early game. They took a series of Liquid, and generally Liquid is an amazing early game team, but Fly to Moon out early game the best early game team in the world, which is an achievement for itself. They got beat by Liquid, but I think they're pretty happy because they're not trying, like, they won't realistically qualify for TI anyway. They got a lot of money out of this tournament and I think a huge increase in their fan base because they were, after they defeated VP, all the Russians were of course cheering for them and they made a great run. The game they took off Liquid was actually very convincing in my opinion. Like, they crushed Liquid
in the one game that they mm-hmm. won. But they lost
overall. They lost the other two games and Liquid. So yeah, Liquid got beat by PSG, LGD in the upper bracket finals, dropped down in the lower bracket, beat Fly to Moon, and then lost to LGD again in the grand finals, which was of course sad. But in my opinion, it's a strat.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of their drafts for so in their last two series, so in the series against VP and the series against Liquid, and like you were saying, they really, it looks like they really were prioritizing the early to mid game.
Yes.
They just didn't give
the teams room to breathe.
Right, and picking carries that could fight early, and it, you know, again towards the mid game, So heroes like Gyrocopter or cores like Templar Assassin, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's actually very true.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's really cool. It's always nice to see teams that you're not expecting, you know, underdogs do well. And who knows, maybe they'll grind their way to TI in the qualifiers.
Maybe. I'd really like to see that. I think their playstyle is super fun to watch.
Anything is possible!
Yes.
All right, so what do we have on the radar? What do we have to look forward to in terms of Pro Dota?
Coming up next is the GESC Minor, which is in Thailand, I believe. Okay. And after that, it's just three huge majors. So it's ESL One Birmingham, mm-hmm. then it's another Chinese major, and then we're going to have the Super Major, which is... it's kind of, I'd say it's a tier between TI and the major, because it gives $1.5 million in prize pool as opposed to $1 million on a normal major. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot more teams. It's a way longer tournament than your average major. And you also get a lot more DPC points because it's right before TI. And that's going to be a huge event.
Yeah, that'll be really exciting. Something else that is going to be very exciting is the Dota 2 Twitter account tweeted a little Easter egg, a little spoiler, a little tease. Looks like we have a battle pass, folks, that should be out today at some point. That is May 8th. It should drop today. We're very excited for that, obviously.
I am. I'm going to buy it immediately.
I don't want to spend too much time speculating on what that will entail, because it is going to be out soon enough.
Yeah, and I think the timing for this podcast of the Battlecast coming out is of course bad, but I think we'll just be able to actually use the Battle Pass and give our opinions next podcast, which is of course really nice.
Absolutely, and that'll be great. But now it's time to give our opinions about one of your favorite heroes, Storm Spirit. So Hero of the Week this week, as we teased earlier in the show, is that guy, Storm Spirit. So please, take it away. Give us some knowledge about the Storm Spirit.
I'm going to walk you through the abilities first. So his first ability is called Static Remnant. And it's a very simple ability, actually. It's on a 3.5 second cooldown. It does 260 damage, only costs 100 mana, which is not a lot for how much mana Storm Spirit has. And it creates an explosively charged image of Storm Spirit that lasts 12 seconds and will detonate and deal damage if an enemy unit comes near. So it's a little Storm Spirit clone, and if you come near him, he explodes and you take damage, basically. That's what it is.
Yep.
It's triggered by both heroes and creeps.
Okay, sounds good. What's his W?
His W is called Electric Vortex. It's a stun, which has a very short range, so you basically have to stand right next to somebody to use it. But that's easy enough to do with his ult, which we're going to talk about in a second.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a 2.5 second stun. It's on a 18 second cooldown, and it slows Storm Spirit for 50% for 3 seconds.
Right. Technically, this pulls the enemy unit to Storm Spirit.
Yes.
So
it pulls the enemy unit to the point where Storm Spirit was standing when he cast the spell.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So you can stun people and then zip away, and they're still going to be pulled to the point where you were standing.
Gotcha. And that pull duration goes from 1 second up to 2.5 seconds.
Yep.
Cool.
His next ability is called Overload. And it's really simple. Every time you cast a spell, your next attack gets buffed, and you can store that buff for as long as you want, but it's always going to be your next attack. So next attack is going to deal 40, 60, 80, 100. 100 damage at level 4, magic damage, additionally, mm-hmm. with your normal damage added on top. And it's gonna slow the enemy attack for 50, and the movement for 80, and that slow lasts for 0.6 seconds.
I have a question for you. It has a radius, so does it do damage in a radius, or is it just the slow that affects the in the radius?
It's both. So it's the slow and the damage.
Ooh, that's pretty good.
That's pretty nice. It's good again. It's great for creep farming in combination with his static remnant, because you just Q, it's going to do some AoE magic damage, and then you also have your overload, and that's going to be most of a creep wave for creep camp dead already.
But nice.
Let's talk about his ultimate, which brings this whole skill set together. It's called Ball Lightning, and it makes it's. I'm sure you have seen it. It's kind of hard to explain. He becomes a little lightning ball, and you zip around where you target the map, where you target on the map. It drains your mana while zipping, and it has an initial mana cost. So the initial mana cost is 30 plus 8% of his total mana pool, and the cost per 100 units traveled is 12 plus 0.7% of his total mana pool, which is kind of complicated. So it basically, for every action, it takes a base amount of mana plus amount of your max mana pool added on top. The only thing that scales with this ability is the speed at which he zips and the damage he does while zipping, because for every 100 unit he travels, he also stores up to 16 damage, which he will deal on the point of impact.
Okay, so the further you zip, the more mana you use, but the more damage you deal.
You generally don't use it as a nuke, because it's not really efficient for how much mana you're putting into it. But sometimes, if you have a good mana pool and know somebody's gonna farm a creep wave, you can just zip from very far away and use all your mana for that one zip. But if you travel for a far distance, it actually does a lot of damage. So sometimes you can just insta-kill people with it, which is really nice.
That's interesting. But
the most important thing most people don't realize is you're invulnerable during Ball Lightning, but you can still use all your spells and all your items.
Wow.
Which means you can zip across somebody, stun them, orchid them, or drop your Q to do damage on them. And you can also get your overload attack off, or your normal attacks, during Ball Lightning.
Okay, good to know. Also, does Ball Lightning dodge projectiles?
Yes, it does. Okay. So it doesn't disjoint, but if it will hit you when you are in the Ball Lightning, it will just be nullified.
Okay, there you go. Anything you want to go over with his talents?
I think the talents I want to go over is his level 15 talent, which gives you 80 static remnant damage.
Okay.
And your level 25 talent, which gives you, you will autocast a remnant with no additional mana cost for every 500 distance traveled with your Ball Lightning.
Okay.
Which is insane late game when the BKB durations are really short and you can just zip around the team fight and cast a ton of his Q.
Okay, so do you want to talk a little bit about how you play Storm Spirit?
I guess I could talk about the combo you generally want to use, because you get an overload attack on every spell you use. And you're a ganking hero, obviously. You go mid, you want to get an early advantage, you want to snowball. And the general combo you want to use is because you want to maximize the amount of overloaded attacks you put in. And you don't want to use two spells after each other without attacking in between, because that's basically wasting the slow and 100 magic damage. So you zip in, get your attack off during the zip, because you can attack during the zip.
Yep.
Then you press Q once, because generally you zip on them, and if you Q right on them, they won't have time to run out of the Q. So you Q, attack again, then you use your W, attack again, and then your Q is going to be off cooldown again, and you press Q, they're going to be pulled into the Q by your W, and then you attack them again. And that's, I think, about 1,000 magic damage done in like 5 seconds.
Right. And if you need to buy more time, you could do a short range zip, which would reload your...
Yes. After you're done with your initial combo, your stun is going to be on long cooldown because it's on an 18 second cooldown. You're just going to zip around very short range so you don't waste too much of your mana and just attack them all the time and maybe cast one or two Qs. But the thing you don't want to do is you never want to do a stationary zip, because Storm is very... Because in theory, just zipping where you are standing right now, it gets counted as a zip, and it only takes the initial damage, the initial mana cost of him. So it's very efficient for mana purposes, mm-hmm. but I would generally not recommend it, because Storm's very vulnerable to disabled, and if you're standing right there, they can just disable you. But if you zip and then attack, they'll have to move their mouse again to the point where you zipped, and that buys some extra time for you. So I would generally recommend short-range zips instead of just clicking where you're standing.
Yeah, it's quite disorienting when you get gone on by a storm and then he's zipping around.
He just zips everywhere. You can't target him very well.
It makes it harder to do, like you were saying, any kind of counter plays. One thing I want to say is, like you were saying, for his laning stage, he's very vulnerable to ganks prior to level 6. So if you're playing against the Storm, I think it's a great idea to devote resources to make his laning stage hard before level 6.
Yeah. His weak laning stage, especially against range heroes, is actually one of the ways how Ice Rock balanced him, because... Mm-hmm. Storm Spirit is one of the best heroes in the late game, because he gets a lot of int items and an orchid, eventually Bloodthorn, so he hits very hard and he just has basically unlimited mobility, a shit ton of magic damage, a good disable, he just has everything in the late game. And the way Ice Frog balanced him is just making his laning stage awful against ranged heroes and making him very vulnerable to ganks before level 6. And you can see that by his abilities, because remember, if you cast a stun on somebody, it's going to slow you for 50% for 3 seconds. So it's even mm-hmm. longer than the actual stun. If you're level 6, it doesn't really matter, because you generally don't walk. You just zip around after you stun somebody. Mm-hmm. But in the laning phase, you can't just stun somebody and then run away, because you're going to be slowed by so much that you won't get very far.
Yeah, that makes sense. Do you have any advice for folks who are just starting to learn the hero? So somebody like me, who really has never played too much Storm Spirit because I'm pretty intimidated by his skill cap, what would you say?
My advice would be don't just pick him, because a big part of Storm Spirit is picking him, not picking him all the time. Because I only pick Storm Spirit when they have... maximum 3 stuns and no silences, which makes him really strong. And of course, people like Anti-Mage counter him because he has a huge mana pool and depends on his mana. But pick him in the right situations. Don't be over aggressive with your zips, especially if you have a Bloodstone, because dying when you have a Bloodstone just hurts you so much. Because the way Bloodstone works with Storm Spirit is actually with Storm Spirit, you want to kind of maintain a small mana pool with high regen. Because his drain from Ball Lightning is percent on his total max mana pool. So if you just have a huge mana pool with no regen, you can just zip a short range and then you're done. But with high regen, you can just, of course, regen up. But if you die with your Bloodstone, it's going to give you a ton of mana, because the charges don't give you mana, they give you mana regen. So you're going to have a ton of mana, so you won't be able to zip as far anymore. The way you ideally want to balance it is with the charges, so it gives you a lot of regen. But if you don't have the charges, Bloodstone actually not only not positively affects you, it negatively affects you.
Yeah, that makes sense, because his, like you were saying, his level 6 is based on percent mana. So if you have a bigger mana pool, it'll cost more to cast your spells. If you don't, and then you don't have the same regen that you would have otherwise, so you get screwed.
Yep.
And also... So yeah, go ahead.
No, don't buy Bloodstone if you're behind. It's just going to end up hurting you. I know the region is nice, but go for an Orchid or Lincoln's early if you really have to.
Sure. Okay, that sounds like good advice. I would definitely emphasize the point, like, get comfortable with how much mana your Ball Lightning costs at different points in the game.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, because you don't want to jump in and then be like, oh no, I only have enough for one static remnant and now I can't get out. That feels really bad when that happens. So, yeah.
Like, if you're gonna initiate on somebody, use the ult for, not for coming in from your tower. Just use your ult for the last 500 units and try to conserve your mana as fast as much as possible, and only do short range zips, and only do long range zips when necessary. And just try them out in bot games, because you can't make the calculations when you're actually playing, because everything happens so fast. You just have to get a feel for how much mana you're using and how much mana you're gonna have left after you do a zip.
Right. It's different than some other heroes with calculating mana, because for other heroes, you just look at what the mana cost is. You say, okay, it costs 100.
Yep.
You know, plus my ult, you know, costs 200. So as long as I have 300 mana, I'm fine. But for Storm Spirit, it's more complicated, because like we were harping on, you know, the ball lightning is percent based. So you just kind of got to get. Just gotta get some experience and you'll figure it out from there.
Yeah, if you can do that, you're actually a god.
Right. If you can do that.
I can't imagine anybody being like, I'm gonna zip 500 units. What's 500 plus 12 times 5 plus 0.7 of my total mana pool multiplied by 5, all that together? I can't imagine anybody.
If you can do that, then that means that you are Ice Rock, which, congratulations, thanks for listening to We Like Dota. Incredible.
You know you do.
Yeah, so, let's move on to the best segment of the week, Noobs Ask Noobs. So the first question comes to us from OC Panda. He writes, I'm an EG fanboy, and I want to see them qualify for TI in the top 8. How do you think they'll fare playing in the 3 of the next 4 majors? They play in GESC, ESL, and the China Super. Does the current meta suit them?
Do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. I think they will be fine. In terms of the current meta suiting them and all that kind of stuff, I am not going to pretend like I have a deep enough understanding of the meta and Dota to comment on whether that suits EG or not. I would say that EG always has a chance. They always have a chance. As long as they have Sumail and the rest of the roster, they're always going to be in it. The metas are going to come and go. And it's more just, are they going to show up and play well? For me, it's not so much a commentary on the meta. It's more a commentary on what kind of EG are you going to get? Because they're a little bit Jekyll and Hyde. So I think we're going to find out what kind of team EG is. Is it going to be the team that we want them to be, the top tier team? Or is it going to be the team that, you know, we flame when they drop on the, you know, on the first day and they don't, you know, they don't really show up?
Especially, you would never flame EG. Let's be
What do you think?
Do you think they're going to make a surprise TI run?
Do I think that they're going to make a surprise TI run?
Like, just grew really good at TI out of nowhere.
I think it's possible. Sure. I don't know.
I'd say they're actually one of the candidates for surprise TI run, because they're not that good right now. Like, they have a lot of individual talent.
Yes.
And remember what happened to Liquid last year at TI. They got knocked down to the lower bracket early. They had a lot of amazing individual talent, and they kind of adapted their play and improved it during the lower bracket. And I think EG has kind of the same starting point. They have a lot of individual talent, but they kind of lack cohesion. And if they kind of get in the same mindset as Liquid, I think they have the potential to make a similar run. But
yes, I think I totally agree. I think, you know, what what are the ingredients for a surprise run? I would say the best ingredients are what you just said, like having top tier talent. Like, do you have like one or two stars that can just go crazy in a few series?
Mm-hmm.
And for EG, I think the answer to that question is undeniably yes. They have awesome talent. That has never really been EG's problem. Like you said, it's mostly, for whatever frustrating reason, a lack of cohesion. So for me, it's totally possible that they get to, you know, any of these majors, or to TI, and all of a sudden Sumail or Artur or whoever else is just the best player in that series, and they just catch fire. I think that's how I would answer that question.
All right. Next question?
Next question from Dora the Destroyer. Who's a hero you thought you'd like before you knew anything about the game? For example, I thought I'd like Earth Spirit because I do martial arts, and the staff is my favorite weapon. Boy, was that a slap in the face. What do you think?
I think, actually, first of all, this is an amazing question. It's very original. I think that would be, for me, Skywrath Mage.
Oh.
I actually remember reading up on Dota 2 Wiki, and I just saw his nuke damage and his movement speed. Because back when I still started Dota, I was just obsessed about two things, which were damage and movement speed. I didn't care about health, armor, scaling, anything else. So I just saw that 1.4k damage nuke, and I was in love. Then I tried to actually play him, and I was just feeding and feeding and feeding, and ruined a lot of pups. So yeah, for me it would be Skyrim Mage.
It's very hard. Speaking about how the game is hard, I know you have a liquid theory that you want to get off your chest. So please, please tell us.
I thought about this on when Liquid was losing against PSG LGD in the Epicenter Finals. Because in a lot of the games, Liquid made a great comeback, was ahead, and then they just died. Like, they just fed. The chat was spamming 3-2-2 because they, like, it seemed so unnatural, especially for Liquid, because how people know Liquid is if you give them an early lead, they're just gonna win the game right then and there. And Liquid just fed and threw every time, and they did that multiple times. So my theory is, I know Liquid, they have stated that they wanna win a major so bad, which I think is a bait. Because what's better than winning a major?
Winning TI.
Yes. And I think Liquid is trying to be the first game to win, the first team to win TI twice. Because how it goes normally is, if you're still relevant after you won a TI, on next TI, every team will study you to death. They're gonna know every strat. They're gonna know everything you play, and they're just gonna outplay you because they know you so well, because you won last TI. Of course, they're gonna study you. So Liquid wants to kind of go low profile. They don't want to win any more major. They sacrificed the plan to win a major. And they just want to lay low, scrim for TI, and then at TI, they're just gonna go crazy and win it again.
It's an elaborate bait.
Yeah, it's a bait. Because the guys from Liquid, they barely ever talk. Except Matumba Man, maybe. They barely talk. And GH, just on every rant, he goes on camera and says, we want to win a major. So I think they're actually trying to mislead people.
Wow. I personally love this idea. I love a long-term conspiracy bait. That sounds perfect. I hope it's true.
Kind of makes sense, because what I saw from them didn't seem like Liquid to me, and I think winning TI twice is everything that's left for Kuroki, especially.
All right, fair enough. Don't worry, Dora the Destroyer, we didn't forget about your question. I'm gonna answer it right now. So what the hero is that I thought I'd like before I knew anything about the hero, but about Dota, I thought that Treant Protector was gonna be my favorite hero because I love Lord of the Rings. That probably comes to no surprise to anybody that's listening, but yeah, I still love Lord of the Rings. I love Treant. I think they're really cool. I think animated trees are really great. the lore around Tolkien's Treants are incredible. And so I saw that hero model and I was like, yes, I can't wait to be a tree and stomp on orcs and kill everyone. And then I got into the game and I realized that tree is he got reworked too from the beginning, so it's a little bit different, but he's just now he's like a little bit more of a sneaky guy. Like you kind of you hang out in the trees, you cast some spells. It's like kind of a weird playstyle.
Such a bad place. Do you know what I mean? The boy has 266 movement speed. He wants to play with
he's
that.
Super weak.
That's actually kind of funny because it's the thing horrible. I was looking for back when I was noob was exactly the opposite of Treant. I just wanted movement speed and big nukes, neither of which Treant has.
Well, I mean, it sounds like you were actually like researching the heroes. I was just like, oh, that one looks cool.
GG.
So, GG. So, last question from A Jar of Salt. And this A Jar of Salt, I'm going to tease. Because the question is, I'd like to learn how to play Shadow Fiend. If you guys could help with that, I'd appreciate it. So I'll tell you what, Jar of Salt. We're going to do Shadow Fiend next week for Hero
nice.
Week.
Yeah,
and
that's a good idea.
We'll try to help you out
if
next
you
week.
Want immediate advice, because I play a lot of mid, and I just get wrecked by Shadow Fiends every time. Because I'm not very good at denying. I don't know why. And you want, because Shadow Fiend has very weak base damage, but he of course gets a lot of damage with the sword. So just be good at denying in the first phase so your damage can snowball and the denying and last hits get easier. So you kind of, what I try to do is keep him small from the start of the game, so try to get every deny and last hit so you can't get damaged. Because if you let him get like 5 denies and last hits, he out damages you and can just keep doing that. So try to be on point with your early denies and last hits, and if you have that and are able to do that consistently, then you're going to be able to just out deny and last hit with your new huge damage from the swords for every game and just wreck the mid lane.
There you have it. To learn more about Shadow Fiend, Shadow Friend really, come listen next week and we'll try and tell you more.
Please
we'll
come
do some
listen.
Research. Yeah, come with please. Team, please. very good. Anything you want to plug before we get out of here?
Nah, not really. Add me on Steam. I'm Ariano2000 on Steam.
Very good. Are we doing EU Theme Thursdays this Thursday?
Not this week, but I'm actually going to be attending NA Theme Thursdays again this week.
Very good.
I got no school for the next 3 days.
Ooh, sounds juicy.
Yeah, it actually
is. Yeah, folks, give us a follow on Twitter. It's at WeLikeDota. We'll be doing Theme Thursday this Thursday. Same time, same place. 8:30 is it usually?
I think so, yeah. 8:30
Eastern. I think that's right. 8:30 Eastern. I don't have what themes we're going to use, but we will get that out to you on the Discord. And we'll look forward to seeing you then.
Yeah.
Till next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.